Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, sometimes it's hard for us to find a good martini, and that was the case again today. But there's at least a sliver of hope for a political good martini eventually as a result of what we're seeing right now with the Obama administration going after defense spending. A part of it is what was part of its own original plan. Part of it's the result of the whole debt ceiling deal from last year. But we're talking about huge amounts of money, radical reductions in ground troops, phasing out different programs, reshifting troops and positions around the world, definitely reducing our footprint in Europe. And so a lot of different things happening here that I think ought to be pretty concerning. And it could be a good political issue for the Republicans in the months ahead against President Obama. But right now, it just looks like his apology tour continues through massive reductions in defense.
Yeah, it's one of those things where this is not exactly, fantastic news. In fact, I think the fact that this is bad news provides an opportunity for the Republican presidential candidates. Just kind of a perspective, this comes out of the super committee not being able to get a deal. They had to enact, across-the-board cuts. The Obama administration had already wanted to do $450 billion in cuts over 10 years before the super committee cuts kicked in, and now we're looking at another $500 billion to $600 billion. So you do the math on that. You're looking at roughly $1 trillion with a TR in defense cuts over the next 10 years. Unsurprisingly, this is deep. Leon Panetta does not like this one bit. Unsurprisingly, the defense industry does not like this one bit. And I think there's real potential for Republicans to say, look at all the other forms of government spending and say, wait a minute, why are we cutting defense in a ways? Look, I mean, the Pentagon is basically coming out and saying, we really can't fight two wars anymore. Now, I remember, showing my age here, all throughout the 90s, the whole idea was the 2.5 war strategy. The whole idea that, heaven forbid the U.S. get involved in another war, and we are still in Afghanistan, and, there's a question of how do you classify something like Yemen or Pakistan or areas where we're using drones, et cetera. But look, the possibility of U.S. troops being needed to fight someone who is attempting to cause chaos and trouble and perhaps humanitarian disasters around the world is not going to go away in the coming years. And so the question is, when do the evildoers, troublemakers, whatever, rogue states or states of concern, as Madeleine Albright liked to call them, what happens when they team up? Or what happens when we get tied down with one and do not have the military resources to respond anywhere else? People said, during Iraq and Afghanistan, doesn't that tie up the U.S. on two battlefronts? Well, it did, but at least we theoretically had the option to respond everywhere else. With these cuts, we just won't have the manpower. We won't have the ships. We won't have the ability to project force all around the world the way we've been used to. Now, you can argue about whether that's a good idea. Some people argue the U.S. has been overextended, but these are deep, deep cuts. They're going to, upset a lot of folks, and I think this is a big opportunity for the Republican presidential candidates.
I think you're right about that. I also think, that most people reasonably, even a lot of conservatives, are fine cutting defense spending in certain ways as part of a larger process of bringing our fiscal disaster under control, whether it's military programs that the military itself doesn't want. Donald Rumsfeld, of course, was trying to reshape the military for the 21st century, and so that might require some cutbacks if you're looking for a leaner, more agile, more mobile force and that sort of thing, rather than huge deployments of ground forces. But it's just so disheartening to a lot of conservatives, I think, Jim, to see the one area where this administration is just gleeful about spending cuts, where in any other area, with all their little pet projects and pet constituents, you try to squeeze a nickel out of them, and they absolutely go ballistic. No pun intended.
Yeah, a good illustration of this. I'm looking at Twitter as we're having this conversation, and someone just observed that, look, we still will have the ability to fight two wars at once. We just need one of those two wars to be with Luxembourg.
On to martini number two now. And Jim, we can't wait. That's been the theme of this president and a number of initiatives over the past few months, basically saying this. Look, this recalcitrant Republican House, Republicans who don't have enough votes to filibuster in the Senate, they're just not going with my agenda, so I'm going to do this piecemeal regardless of the whole separation of powers thing. He did it on mortgages, student loans, most of those more smoke and mirrors than anything else. But on Wednesday, the president went a step further by making a bunch of recess appointments, even though we're not in recess. Just a pesky little thing here from Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. The president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. Well, maybe these non-recess recesses are a little bit gimmicky on the part of the parties out of power or even the parties in power if they don't like the policies of the current administration. But the fact is, there's not a recess. And the president engaged in filibusters when he was in the Senate. And so he's hardly one to throw stones. He criticized President Bush for recess appointments, John Bolton, among others. And so not only was it Richard Cordray with the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, but also three members of the National Labor Relations Board. Here's the president yesterday in Ohio, first of all, telling us Richard Cordray is going to do for us.
Today, I'm appointing Richard as America's consumer watchdog. And that means he is going to be in charge of one thing, looking out for the best interests of American consumers, looking out for you.
Government bureaucrat looking out for you, Jim. I'm sure you're really excited about that. And here's perhaps the most telltale sign from Obama when he explained that Republicans in the Senate didn't really have a problem with Cordray in particular, but against the overreaching of the law which created his position. And here's kind of a chilling quote from the president.
It's wrong. And I refuse to take no for an answer.
Well, hopefully he'll take no for an answer in November, Jim. But until then, let's hope Republicans have the backbone to actually stand up to this because it's clearly unconstitutional.
Yeah, there was a comment, I believe, from our old friend David Ferdoso saying that if Obama's willing to fight a war with Libya without ignoring the Constitution, without the, you know, violating the War Powers Act, it's really not surprising he would ignore the Constitution on appointees. Just a few moments ago, Newt Gingrich said that the proper response to this is to zero for Congress to zero out funding for the National Labor Relations Board. That sounds fantastic to me. Whether Congress will actually do so is a good question. The Wall Street Journal had a good op-ed this morning, just kind of observing that, look, this is part of the Obama strategy. And in a way, we have now reached the point where Obama, never mind is he not attempting to compromise, that he's looking for fights. He's looking to pick fights. The title of this op-ed is called Contempt for Congress. And, think about it. These appointees, there hasn't been a hearing on them. You know, Congress has never had the chance to even question them, much less decide whether or not they're good folks. And as we all have seen in South Carolina, the National Relations Board has enormous power. It can basically effectively block Boeing. So I think this is another big issue for Republicans. Unfortunately, there's very limited, constitutional authority for Congress to block this stuff, other than, as Newt suggested, zeroing out the funding. Something that I do find kind of, there is some debate as to whether a pro forma session really means it's out of session, but, is this the way it's going to be now? That basically the president could ignore any congressional opposition to any of his appointees? Is this the end of advise and consent? Because this is pretty much what President Obama is pushing us in this direction.
It certainly seems that way. And you've got Gingrich and a lot of others on the campaign trail very upset about that, one of whom more than likely is echoing that same sentiment as Gingrich and some of the others who are critical of the president, is Texas Governor Rick Perry. And Jim, we have to go all the way back to Tuesday night, about 36 hours ago, when Rick Perry said this.
But with the voters' decision tonight in Iowa, I decided to return to Texas, assess the results of tonight's caucus, determine whether there is a path forward for myself in this race.
That does not sound like an optimistic man. That sounds like a pretty defeated man, and us included assume that meant within a number of hours, probably yesterday, he'd announced that despite all the fanfare of him getting in the race, a few months later it hadn't worked out and he's going to get out. But no, right about the time we were talking yesterday, he sends out a tweet essentially saying, let's go, we're on to South Carolina. And so, Jim, I think it's possible, depending on what happens in New Hampshire and other factors, of course, that Perry could fare relatively well in South Carolina, but it's just odd that he would leave such a glum statement like that and then the next day be waking up and saying, all right, let's go. It just doesn't give us a lot of confidence that this guy's quite sure what he's doing here.
You know, Greg, I'm going to chalk this up to back medication. might have been running low a little caucus night, and he, got another shot of that. I think it was interesting when he sent out that tweet saying, on to South Carolina, it depicted him in jogging, running, dressed for a jog. And apparently it was on this jog that he had this kind of moment of inspiration and said, you know what, I'm not ready to quit. I want to keep doing this. Now, because he said on to South Carolina, from first glance, it looked like he may have run from Iowa to South Carolina. So maybe the guy is just full of energy and ready to go. As somebody who likes Rick Perry, has been a little disappointed about him as a candidate, I kind of am glad that he's making this decision. It seemed, folks who have listened to this podcast know I can't stand the Iowa caucuses and the low turnout process that ends up having so much influence. Perry himself called the process kind of wacky, kind of weird. So I myself like the decision. I think at the very least he should be, you know, stick around till South Carolina. That seems like the most natural state for him to do well in. If he does poorly in South Carolina and he concludes his heart isn't in it, then, you know, he can quote that Davy Crockett line and say, all of you can go to hell, I'll go to Texas. And that's perfectly fine. But I think he should give his supporters in a few more states the chance to vote for him. That was kind of my view on Bachman, that I just kind of find it baffling to leave so early. Having said that, it is still a steep uphill climb. But hey, you know what? Let's see what happens. Just last year, we saw the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Green Bay Packers, Greg. So there's a reason we play these games, so to speak. There's a reason that, you know, all of the prognostication, all of the trends, everything you see beforehand, you got to go out and see what happens when the voters actually vote. And, you know, maybe some big surprise will happen for Rick Perry. Not too long ago, people did not think Rick Santorum had much of a chance. So we will see what happens. But I think, you know, good for Rick Perry in this one.
Yeah, trends can shift quickly. I think there's goals 1 and 1A here. One is to become the Republican nominee. 1A is to make sure Mitt Romney doesn't. And with Newt Gingrich going up to New Hampshire with both 12 gauges firing, Rick Perry's right behind him with a howitzer, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to tweak that a little bit, Greg. I think there's three things he wants to do. He wants to be the nominee. He wants to stop Mitt Romney. And the third one is that never gets old. We're going to be doing this joke for the remainder of the campaign. So.
Exactly. He needs to stay in just to give us fodder for that.
A few more weeks of good joke, good forgetful material.
There you go. Jim, have a great day. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.